Well, hey, welcome to Hey, Let's Heal. I'm your host, Alexis M. Lott, and it's my responsibility to help God's chosen thrive in relationships despite trauma so that you can live and love well. And on today's episode, I am, if you're watching on video, joined by my hubby, Kendarius, Mr. Lott.
Hey, y'all.
Hey, and we today are just gonna kind of dialogue about relationships and relationships, I guess, in the context of healing from trauma and what it was like to date, knowing that you had baggage. And what we did on our journey to kind of, I say, secure our relationship despite some of the things we were going through. So,
how we secured the bag.
Right, secured the bag of one another. So yeah, if you're just joining, of course, you can go back and listen to some previous episodes where I share my story, where I talk about how my relationship with my husband was the test for me to say, girl, it's time for you to go to therapy and get some help. All right. It was a relationship that let me know that just because I had been a Christian for about 8 years consistently up until that point, it did not necessarily mean that I was healing. And one of the things that we talk about here on Hey, Let's Heal is that your emotional wholeness and your spiritual wholeness are not mutually exclusive. So you can be a person who really thinks you are real deeply spiritual, but if you're not emotionally whole, that spirituality is as good as nothing. So we're kind of fruit over gifts over here. And for a long time, I was known for my spiritual gifts, but did not understand how a lot of that impacted my emotional health. And so we're just going to kind of dive in, maybe just tell our story briefly, and then just talk deeply about what it was like. What is it like to date someone that is healing from trauma? And in my case, and as many of my listeners, complex trauma. So you didn't just have one incident happen to you, with several incidents wrapped all together. And how do you get to a healthy relationship knowing that you are healing from trauma? So that's what we're talking about today. So go ahead, sir.
Go ahead, sir.
Yes, if you want to start us out on, I guess, our dating journey and life and what all that was like.
Our dating journey. So we have been together as a couple for 6 years this January.
Yes.
Married for 3 for this coming October. Mm-hmm. Depending on which one of us is telling the story, it's going to tell who left first.
Oh, my God.
And since I'm telling the story, she liked me first.
It's not
Yo,
true.
Yo, don't feel. Don't feel.
It's not true.
You be telling these people to tell you people the truth. I like to joke all the time, and you can ask my guy friends, Alexis tried to run from the kid.
Whatever.
We, for like a year, from like 2017 to 2018, we did this very awkward flirt. I don't like you. You like me.
Yeah.
Things. Yeah, I don't even know what it's called. Other people were like, so they all like each other, and it was like, no! we were very adamant that we did not, but then we were showing up at each other in like boyfriend-girlfriend ways.
Yeah.
So Alexis bought me this, I'll never forget, my 27th birthday. Mm-hmm. Alexis was just my friend, and she bought me this gift card to Texas Roadhouse, and y'all, it was a pretty hefty card amount. And one of my really good guy friends was like, hey, Katie, she wants you to take her to dinner. And I was like, no, she
doesn't. I just wanted him to enjoy some, you know, some honey butter biscuits, honey butter rolls.
You did not just want me to enjoy the honey butter rolls. But he was like, I think she wants you to take her to dinner. And I was like, no.
Wait. Hold on. I don't think it was.
Oh, Father.
Was it not recording?
Father.
Why does it have more than one spot to record? Three, two, one. Okay, it's coming down. All right. Well, we are back. I am over here with some new technology. And so I just wanted to make sure that this was recording.
How do I look ashy?
So that's just.
Is that the light?
That's the light, baby. You're not ashy. I would have told you if you was ashy. Hold on. Let me come down. All right. Well, we are back. I am over here. All right, we're back. So, editor's error. We are recording. All right, so anyway, go ahead, Vay.
So, back to this gift card. Guy friend was like, hey, she wants you to take her to dinner. I was like, no. And I ended up using that gift card to feed me and my roommate. We thank you for that meal.
Mm-hmm.
Amen.
Mm-hmm. Whatever.
That same summer, Alexis ended up preaching at a church here in town. And I just felt really, like, pulled to, like, go and be supportive. At that same engagement, she ended up having a sickle cell flare up and, like, crisis. And so I'm, like, texting her because I can tell she can't, she literally can't breathe. And I'm texting her, like, hey, what's going on? Hey, we need to leave. Hey, da-da-da, hey. And she's ignoring my text messages so that she can stick through this engagement.
Mm-hmm.
Engagement ends and Alexis pretty much passes out of her car. And I have to drive her to the hospital. And I sit with her at the hospital. I come back and visit the next day. And I think that was the first, like, hospital experience I had with you.
Yeah.
And even in that space, it was like, okay, what are we doing? And so we still were, like, not owning up to liking each other.
Oh, in that moment you said that you had to go pick up my car.
Yeah.
Because we had to leave my car there. And you said the Lord asked you.
Well, he asked me that at the hospital. The Lord asked me, he was like, could you do this for the rest of your life? And I was like, I mean, yeah, we'll be friends. Like, I got her back. Like, like, I was really supportive as a friend.
As a friend.
So that was over the summer. We get to the fall. And in the fall, we're both, like, flirting. And one of us more than the other. And Alexis is like, it's weird. Like, we're flirting. It's a thing. And I end up, like, engaging her back. We're flirting. And she texts me. And she's like, hey, are you flirting with me? And I just kind of look at my phone. And I'm like, is this life? Like, is this how we're doing this? And so I was like, yes. And then she goes, why are you flirting with me? I was like, I think it's pretty self-explanatory, like, why I'm flirting with you. Like,
it made me feel so awkward because at the time, I had friend zoned the stew out of him.
Bad.
Like,
well, no, actually, you hadn't yet. You had not.
It
had
I
not
had friend zoned you after.
Yeah, and so we end up, like, having this conversation. I tell her I like her. Y'all, Alexis sends me a page-long text message the next morning about why we can't date. Like, it's what do you bring to the table, Alexis? And she's talking about herself in third person.
Trauma response.
And so she's just going in this text message. And I'm the type of dude, like, once you do that, I'm good. Like, you want to be friends, we'll be friends. And so at that point, I was like, well, moving along. We went to church, and this moment of high praise breaks out, and the Lord's like, go shout with your wife. And I was like, you can't be talking about Alexis. he was like, go shout with your wife. And I was like, all right.
Mm-hmm.
So we shouted together.
And he came down off the stage and got me to
shout. For those that don't know, I'm a worship leader. And so I left platform that day to go shout with Alexis. And then the day, she invites me to go to Starbucks so that we can work on branding material for our young adult group at church.
That's what we were there to do.
Okay. Y'all, what it really was is Alexis and I had never really hung out outside of our core group of friends solo. And so this was her testing if we could hang out solo. And so we hung out that night. We went back to our friend's house. I leave, and Alexis has a conversation with one of our closest friends, Tamara.
I fall on the floor.
And roll on the floor, and she's telling Tamara that she likes me.
And I'm screaming, I really like you, but I don't know what to do.
While at the same time, I'm on the phone with one of my closest brothers, Norman. And I'm like, Norman, she's playing games. Like, I don't know what to do. She done invited me out to talk about branding, which I know she likes me. Like, I don't know what this is about. And so Norman and I decide
that they're going to break up with me.
We are not dealing with this. We're not playing games. We're done. And we decide that I'm having a conversation with Alexis the next day to say, hey, if you don't want to be with me, I'm not going to do this back and forth with you. I'm out. Like, I'm not going to play games with you. And my little guy group, like, we move as a tribe. So I was like, all right, got it. I wake up the next morning to a phone call from Tamara, and she's like, hey, Alexis likes you. And at this point, I'm completely thrown because I have gotten Alexis's page-long text message. What did Aaliyah say? I'm sending a four-page letter. Alexis sent a letter, fam.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, and don't forget, you snapped on our whole friend circle.
Yes.
Because she felt like everybody was planting seeds for us liking each other. And so she's like...
People was talking about they was having prophetic dreams, seeing us do stuff together. And I was like, hold on, hold on, hold on.
You guys are planting seeds and you need to stop it, like she snapped on our whole friend group. And so when she's like, she does like you, da 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 da. I called my mentor at the time and I talked to him about it. And so it would be a few days later.
Yeah.
Or the next day, maybe?
It was the next day.
So that was a Thursday. First date almost situation was a Thursday. Mm-hmm. Tam calls me on a Friday. And so we have our conversation on that following Saturday. And so that was January 6th.
January 6th, my first ever ministerial staff meeting.
Yeah, and we avoided each other in that meeting that day because it was like, no. and we've been together ever since.
Yeah. So our story was kind of unique because we really did not date and didn't see a reason to.
Well, we didn't. We dated.
We
just did not go through the talking phase of like what people do, the whole text you back and forth and then 6 months in be like, are you my girlfriend? Mm-mm. We didn't do that.
We skipped all that. Mm-mm. And really to this day, don't think that it's necessary a lot of times for couples to do. Because I just remember being very honest and telling him in that conversation, you know, if I saw you go out on a date or knew of you out on a date with somebody else as of this point, like I would feel some type of way. Like I would feel jealous. And so I knew where I stood emotionally. And another big check for me was like, I had my list as a woman, but I had to also realize that my list was unrealistic. And so I went back to God like earlier that year. I never forget. I was in Savannah, Georgia with my mom. And I really went and just like journaled down what I wanted in a spouse based on the clarity of the needs that I finally understood that I had that were not just based on something superficial. They were based on the reality of my life. And now me understanding what the core needs are of a feminine soul. Like what does it mean to be a woman with these needs? And we talk about that in my online course that I have. And helping women define those things is one of the things that I do in coaching, because I think it's so important when you are knowing that you want to be married, that you don't pick someone based on something superficial, that you really pick those things based on principles, because you will live with that person's character for the rest of your life. Like, and very rarely do character mm-hmm. and personality change. So one of the things that I was clear that I wanted, which was a really big thing for me at the time, was I wanted to marry somebody who was a virgin. And I know a lot of people are like, well, Alexis, when you weren't a virgin, at the time I had not had sex in 10 years. Well, at the time, eight years, cause it would be another two before we got married. And so I definitely, at that point in my life and in my maturity and walk with the Lord, saw sex in a completely different light because of some of the things that I got taught and some of the things that I lived and recognized that like, it was very like important to me that the person that I was with had not physically been with someone else sexually. Mm-hmm. Because I began to understand things about what it means to literally give your body to someone. And when I got proper teaching, it gave me one conviction, but it gave me too a desire to want to do things God's way. And so it was a real big ask for me to write down in my journal, like, I want to marry somebody who's never been with somebody before. And God honored it. And so when Canaris and I start talking, you know, that first conversation, we were just kind of going through, like, we talked about the deep stuff immediately because we mm-hmm. already had a foundation of friendship. And when I recognized, I was like, oh, God answered one of my prayers was, can he handle the fact that I am chronically ill? Like, I have sickle cell disease. I don't foresee that going away no time soon. So does he have the patience and the spirit to deal with someone who has a chronic illness? And God like answered that for me, like real big, like check, like our first, mm-hmm. You know, encounter with him really like being there for me, was through sickness. And so One of the things I teach is called the Relationship Attachment Model, RAM. And one of the first parts of the RAM model is knowing. And so I felt like because of friendship and the fact that he was not checking for me during friendship, I wasn't checking for him, we didn't have any crushes on each other, it took away this like weird, stop it. We did not come into our friendship though thinking that we were going to end up together or being attracted to each other to the point where we were foreseeing being together.
I'll agree with you there. The only thing I would correct now, just before we get too far down into the story, is saying that we don't believe in the talking phase. We don't believe in the talking phase for couples like us. And when we say couples like us, Alexis and I had been friends for 2.5 years, maybe?
3 years.
Okay, so 2.5, 3 years, we had been friends and in each other's close, intimate friend circle.
Yeah.
We had prayed for each other. We had prophesied to one another. I had washed her feet. We had spent intimate time with one another as friends.
Yeah.
And so for us, the talking phase wasn't necessary because we knew each other in a certain place that the talking phase is meant to uncover.
Right.
We had already done that part of the work.
Right.
As friends. So that is what gave us the ability to skip that step. But for some people, you know, I'm just meeting you in a grocery store, we might need to take that step.
Yeah, you might need to take that. The word, one of the things that I teach is that the word date literally means data. Like, your responsibility during the dating phase is just to gather data on that person.
Mm-hmm.
And I talk about, like, seasons of life. Have you seen this person when they have everything they need, when they have nothing? And when they're angry, when they're sad, like, have you collected enough data on who this person is in some of their best seasons and in some of their worst seasons? And if you have not seen that, I remember when KD didn't have no car and I was picking him up from work and he was in conversation talking about some man, if I could just, you know, we were breaking down his budget so that he could see how he could afford a car payment. Like, I remember them days, you know? So it was one of those situations where, like, he saw me working literally a $9 an hour job. Like when I first got out of college.
Oh, yeah.
So we were in each other's lives in a way, though, I say it was like God kind of gently warmed us up like candle wax.
Mm-hmm.
Like, very slowly warmed us up to the idea of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the, you know, honestly, one of the best things that happens when you get to see who your spouse is from a friendship circle or see them from afar off is that there are so many things in a marriage that I feel like a lot of couples who, when they come in just being in each other's circles and it's immediate attraction and immediate chemistry, there are so many things in that knowing phase that you do not see, that you find out about your spouse the hard way, and you've made a commitment that's very strong. So I would just encourage anyone, ask God for the patience and know your personal temperance, because this is not for everyone, but ask him for the patience to get to know that person as a friend. And that was an example that God set in my life through a set of cousins that I have. Their testimony really ministered to me. And they got to see each other as friends from a distance in a small group until, you know, one day the Lord was literally talking to my cousin. He was like, hey, have you considered this young lady here? But for about a year or two, they only knew each other as friends, but were in the same proximity. And to be honest, I had been in rooms with my husband since college.
Yeah.
And had no idea.
Because we didn't like each other. Like, aside from the, like, we didn't like each other crush type situations, who we were when we met in college in like 2010 was drastically different from who we would be when we would meet each other in like 2016.
Yeah, 2016.
Yeah, 2015, 2016. We were drastically different people. But being drastically different people, we still remember it. I did not like her in college.
No.
She did not like me in college.
No.
And so when we were in the same room, in the same spaces, being invited to do things together, my top of mind was always like, God, I remember her from college. Why is she here? Like, yeah. I have sister Tam. I remember Tam telling me she was inviting her over. And I was like, do you know her? Like,
yeah.
Sam.
I wasn't a fan of
her. Are we sure? Alexis met me with one of my really close friends, Takara. Takara is my sister, love her dearly. But at that point in 2010, we had the attitudes of
two catty college females that thought they were better than everybody else.
We had the attitudes. I don't even know the words. Like, it was wild.
They were entitled and spoiled and mean. Y'all was mean.
Wow. Those are loaded words.
Yes, y'all were.
We may have been mean, but for us, we weren't mean. We were protective. And what a lot of people misconstrue, and I say this all the time about our friendship circle, is we fought really hard to protect what we had built in our friends. And the fight that we put up to protect what we had built in those friendships speaks to the fact that those friendships, now 15 years, now going into 16 years later, still stand.
Mm-hmm.
And so everybody could not be our friend. Everybody could not come in our space. Sometimes it came across mean. Sometimes it came across nasty, catty, whatever words you choose to use. We protected the heck out of them friendships. And to this day, several of them people in them friendships I can call and they will show up at the drop of a hat. True or false?
That's true.
So now I will say, when we met Alexis, the problem was we was running a Christian organization on campus and we were the Black Christian organization, period. Alexis showed up in her sundress and sun hat talking about, I want to invite you guys to my worship night at the clock tower. Girl, who are you?
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? Back up. And then she was Black. Uh-uh. Worship night and we not invited? We the choir. You need to come to our stuff. Come to us.
Y'all remember that E word that I used? Entitled?
Fam.
You see this?
It was rough.
You see this? So anyway.
But when we would see each other again 5 years later, the having to warm up to each other, we also had to warm up past who I remembered Alexis as and who Alexis remembered me as. Because who I was in 2010, still very scarred from molestation, very scarred from father issues, very scarred from church trauma, was not who I was when she would meet me in 2015, 2016, having started healing.
Yeah.
Having started growing into myself, and same thing for her, you know, walking out a healing journey. We were just very different people. And so we could not continue to judge each other based upon who we were then, because if we had done that, we would not have gotten here.
No. I think that is such an important nugget that you bring up is, could your boo be in a circle of not just a friend zone, but could they be in a, I ain't never talking to them zone, or a box of, you know, you have written them off as almost an enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And they are someone who God is saying, you know, that person that you met 5 years ago is not the same person that you would meet now today. And maybe you should relinquish control of the story that you have in your mind of that person that makes you feel safe. Nuggets. But
that piece.
Yeah, we kind of touched on a lot, but I do want to dive into what you just kind of talked about and bring us forward of starting a relationship, both of us locking each other. Eventually, we get together, we get married, we do the whole thing. And then during our dating process, I have this monstrous realization that I am still bound by loads of childhood trauma. My God, like, it was bad. Our very first argument was over the fact that I could not afford to buy him a present Valentine's Day. And I got mad at him and took it out on him. And basically, he gave me a very firm boundary. And he was like, whoa, hold on, wait a minute. You're not going to punish me for paying that I did not put there. Because whatever it is you carrying, that ain't got nothing to do with me.
And pause to interject, guys. So, we started dating January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
This is February 8th.
Right.
Like, this is...
And now, mind you, he has never dated anyone, seriously. And
not to this level.
Not to this level, where we kind of knew marriage could be a very serious thing. So I would say old-fashioned, where we were in courtship, not necessarily dating. And for me, I had not dated anyone in 8 years.
Yeah.
And so I was really on this journey where it was just like me and God. And like I said, I thought in the 8 years I was healing until God put love in my path to show me there are parts of your heart, girl, that are real unhealed. You're better, but you are not at your best. You got a lot of, I never forget my close sister in Christ. She said she saw spiritually that I was dealing with a lot of residue of trauma from my past. So I wasn't necessarily dealing with what, like the fullness of what it was, but it's like when you get out of the bathtub and you see all the stuff around the sides, that's residue.
Yeah.
And so it could be clean, but it's just some stuff that's still on your heart and in your emotions. And it takes sometimes, what I say is marriage, and we weren't even in marriage, but we were working towards it. Marriage is both a magnifying glass and a mirror. So it's going to, romantic relationships have a way of showing you yourself and then highlighting and making larger stuff that's already been there.
And it's also an agitator.
Yeah.
It's an agitator too. Like, when you wash clothes, like, the thing in the middle has to, like, work those clothes a little bit to get some of the dirt out. And marriage is also very much an agitator. Because when we were dating, there were certain spaces Alexis would push me in that I'd be like, fam, chill out.
Yeah.
But they were spaces that I just really did not want to deal with yet. And things I just did not feel prepared. Mm-hmm. But if she was going to be my wife, they were things I needed to heal. And so being with her and in our relationship agitated that piece of me to push me to grow. Same thing. When Alexis flipped out on me a month and 2 days in, I know a lot of men don't watch this channel, but men, I would tell you, be cautious when you're jumping into relationships and don't be afraid to ask questions out of fear that the other person may walk away. Like, we need to ask just as many questions as women need to ask. I remember when we had that conversation, I asked Alexis, I said, are we dealing with something that I put there, or are we dealing with something that somebody else put there? Because if it's something that someone else put there, I'm not on the hook for that. I'll support you while you figure it out. I'll be here while you walk through the motions. Like, I'm not trying to break up with you. But baby, you got to figure out where that came from. Like, Debbie, you got to deal with that. And I think men don't ask questions.
Well, men have a tendency to just, when it's new and when it's fresh, the tendency is for the man to take it and not to investigate it. And so I think a lot of times what men end up doing is, you know, before they know it, they have subconsciously agree to saying that this behavior in her is okay because they have not put up a boundary. And so a lot of times, by the time the man in the relationship decides, I have had enough of this, or I can't deal with this anymore, his silence has conditioned that her to say this is okay. And of course, vice versa.
And it's always been this way. So
right. But I think a lot of times where men get trapped in relationships is you try to introduce new boundaries into old habits. And a lot of times then what it then creates on top of that is the woman now reacting to his boundary, saying, well, why is this now all of a sudden a problem? It wasn't a problem 3 months ago, 3 years ago, whatever, whatever. And so now she's feeling like you're changing up on me. And then that ends up breeding more insecurity.
Yeah.
And so, of course, the shoe can be on the other foot. But men do have more of a tendency to say, I'm getting to know her. And so everything that she's giving me, and especially in the beginning that I felt uncomfortable with, I shouldn't say anything. And I think a lot of times that ends up, ultimately, you're setting the relationship up for failure from the beginning. Yeah.
But the thing I was thinking about this as you said that, what it is men who lack emotional intelligence breed men who lack emotional intelligence. Breeding men who lack emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
Because we are afraid to confront. We don't want to have an argument. I would rather just deal with your stuff and go home and talk to my boys. versus having to argue with you.
Right.
Or even like you said, offend you. I'd rather just bear it. I guess one of my traumas was fatherhood trauma, but realizing now I grew up a lot around my mom and my aunts. And I grew up a lot of times, and when I was in college and going through some of my formative years, I was around large groups of women. And so what that taught me as a man is I knew the games women played because I had enough friends, I had watched. And so I was like, I ain't gonna take that. I'll take that. I won't take that. And so it gave me really firm boundaries and it taught me levels of emotional intelligence. But if I did not have that, when Alexis snapped on me about not being able to buy me a gift, I would have just sat quietly and took it. And then 6, 7 months down the line,
Right.
when it happened again, I would have been like,
Okay, we're breaking up.
correct. But because I was willing to hear her out, but then say, hey, I didn't do, I didn't, I, no, I didn't put that there. Somebody else put that there. We got to work through that. It was a level of emotional intelligence for us both to walk more healthier towards our future.
We started out healthy, which I will say, many of you in listening to previous podcast episodes and hearing my story, it was when KD came along that I decided this man is my husband, and God spoke to me and told me that he was. It did not necessarily mean that I knew how to be a wife. And so because of that, I had to make up my mind that I needed help because I did not grow up with healthy examples of you said men breed men who are emotionally intelligent. Women do the same thing with their daughters and with their children. So I did not grow up with the greatest examples of how to resolve conflicts at all. But by the time KD came along, God had chipped away 8 years of me being with him only for me to now know through friendships and through relationships that, uh-oh, this is a pattern of something I'm just not good at. And I have to have the humility. I had just got finished writing a book on shame. And the book came right before Katie. And when I say the book is just a compilation of the revelation God gave me, making this really short. What I recognized is that there was nothing wrong with feeling emotions. My number one issue was constantly attaching shame to the way that I felt. So I would judge myself for feeling what I felt, and I was never emotionally honest with God. When I got emotionally honest with God, my life completely changed. So when KD gave me that feedback, honestly, and he put up a boundary that said, "Hey, you won't treat me like this," I had to then go look in the mirror and go, "Okay, girl, this isn't the first relationship that you have where someone is telling you the way that you react hurts me." And more than one person keeps telling you about this area in your life, it has to, there is some truth to it. Like, you can't just keep saying it to everybody else. And I wanted him enough. At the time, I didn't want me. I did not see the benefit in going to heal for Alexis. I went to therapy because I did not want to lose him. And I'll never forget my therapist. You know, she asked me the question. She was like, "Why are you here?" And I was like, "Well, I have the potential of new romance in this guy that's in my life. That's really like pushing me to make sure that I am the best version of myself." And I realized I got a lot of trauma in here. And so that 2018 started for me an intensive, almost twice a month regimen of being in cognitive behavioral therapy with a licensed Christian therapist. And for me, that was one of the best things to happen for my life. Like, when I got out of therapy, I realized that regardless of if KD is here or not, I'm very grateful that I did this for Alexis and for to be the best version of myself for God, which then subsequently is for others because we love him by how we love others. But I'm very grateful that I did it for me, because I learned so much, and I'm definitely, I mean, I could say not the same person that I was when
Oh,
we
absolutely not.
first got together, which preserved our marriage. Your individual healing will preserve your marriage. There's nothing like you having as an individual unit. You do nothing but strengthen your unit when one of you gets healthier emotionally. So
I, to kind of like, I guess, even playing field, Alexis was not the only person in our relationship with drama.
Right.
at all. She started her healing journey first, but she was not the only one of us with trauma, like, coming into our relationship. And honestly, the start of our relationship threw us probably into more trauma.
Yeah.
it threw us into some more. I had come from a home. I grew up in a two-parent home that sometimes felt like one. I remember at a certain point in my family, there were like 17 of us living in one house. Mm-hmm. So we grew up in poverty. I was a PK, and Bebe, to all the PKs, I pray for you often because
Lord only knows.
Help us all. And so when we started our relationship, Alexis kind of started her healing process right after we started our relationship. So that was February, I want to say. Mm-hmm. The next, that March, I would lose my spiritual leader, who she had become my rock.
Yeah.
Like, coming from where I came from into now what I felt like was a healthier place for myself, I would lose her. And that, even in a relationship that is 2.5 months old, one of us loses... I lose my spiritual leader, who was also her spiritual leader at the time, but not to the same depth. Level of me, of mine. And I lose her, and I literally have nothing to give Alexis because my leader is gone. She is the person who at some point I had planned to talk to about marrying Alexis and the next phases of healing and the next phases of journey for myself into manhood, and she's gone. Yeah. And so then I'm lost for real.
Yeah.
Because what am I supposed to do? And truth be told, we had gotten a new pastor actually in January. Which was her son. But she was still on the scene. And he already know I love him now, but we already know how that was going. I had plans to talk to her. But she dies. And so I'm lost now because the person who I was supposed to get direction from is gone.
Right.
And then that following April... my grandfather is diagnosed with cancer. My grandfather was like my dad. He helped raise me. He was everything for me. Mm-hmm. And he's diagnosed with cancer on the heels of my leader dying from cancer.
Yeah.
Loaded. And so I'm like thrilled. Alexis would try to touch me at certain points. And I literally did not want her to touch me because if she had touched me, I was going to fall apart. And so she wasn't the only one, like, processing
pain,
complex, yeah, trauma and pain in that moment. Because for her, she was processing years of pain before. Mm-hmm. For me, I was processing some fresh, current, just things, life blows that were coming at me. Mm-hmm. And we had to commit to each other.
Yeah.
Me to say, hey, I'll help you heal what that is. And Alexis to say... I'll help you process through this pain of what these losses are feeling like and what these blows feel like to your soul. Because it takes a lot out of you. And as men, we are taught to be strong. We are taught to be epitomes and pictures of strength. And so we don't want to cry.
Yeah.
We don't want to shed a tear. We want to press and we want to push. And so we throw ourselves into work and other things to avoid feelings. But that's like I said earlier, relationships are an agitator, because as I was trying to avoid feelings and Alexis is going through a healing process with her therapist, Alexis is coming back like, actually, what that is.
Yeah.
Why did it happen like that? Because I remember we found out my grandfather had cancer, and 2 weeks after we found out how severe it was and that they gave him 6 months to live. And I walked to the Riverwalk with Alexis and we're on the Riverwalk and she looks at me and she goes, how do you feel about your granddaddy's diagnosis? And I lose it.
I'm like, snaps on me.
I mean, I'm thinking this is the dumbest question you ever asked me in my days. I lose it. At the Riverwalk. In Columbus, Georgia. Cutting through. She's still trying to push me to talk about it. I don't want to talk about the fact that he's dying. Like, girl, find something else to talk about. And finally, we get to a point, I look at her and I say, if you don't stop talking about this, you're walking home. You're walking home.
It's funny now, but it was not funny then.
And so we get in the car, we drive home in silence. I drop Alexis off. I come back here. I'm venting to my roommate. We get on the phone and she's like, why did you react like that? And I'm like, because I didn't want to talk about it. Well, why do you want to talk about it? I wasn't ready for it. Why weren't you ready for it? Trauma.
Trauma, yeah.
Nobody had ever asked me how I felt. Nobody had ever made me talk about my emotions. Mm-hmm. I was always really good at being a strong friend. I had never had somebody support me. And so having somebody support me, radar, alert, alert, alert. You're finna be vulnerable. Here's somebody for you to let your guard down with. I don't do that.
Yeah.
And all of my alarm systems went off. And that was then I had to start processing through what all that was. Luckily, my new pastor. God bless his soul. God bless his soul. But he was prepared. He became my guy. Like even to this day, he is the ear for me. She had a therapist. I had my pastor. And so he helped me process through a lot of what that felt like and what that season, because I would be an integral part of like the care team for my grandfather for 2 years.
Yeah.
As he walked through a cancer journey. And so I had to also have somebody to talk to.
Support.
And even though Alexis was my girlfriend, become my fiance, and eventually become my wife, I had to have somebody to talk to help me process my stuff just like she was processing hers.
Yeah. So I say, y'all, this episode of Hey, Let's Heal, I mean, man, this is rich. I think we should do a part two. I think we'll do a part two. Yeah, we want to honor the time, though, for both of us. But this, for those of you who are considering dating, knowing that you're going to date someone, being self-aware of your own trauma, and then knowing that that person is going to come with their own set of stuff.
Or get some stuff when you get here.
Right. Or life will be happening to them as you're dating them. Mm-hmm. I think a great thing that we have to remember as believers is pointing us back to, I guess the final question to ask is, for you, you answer it and I'll answer it second. Knowing that we were unpacking past pain, we were having to now manage new pain. What made you hang in there and decide that this is still, like, through all that, this is still my person, and we're still going to get to our next phase, which is, at least at that point, it was engagement. Mm-hmm. 'Cause when we got to engagement, you almost wanted to break up with me then. Because I acted a fool, but we'll get to that in our part two. But what held us through courtship to engagement? What got us through that moment? Knowing that I was unpacking my stuff and life was happening to you. What got you through that? What made you hold on?
For me, there was a point when everything happened in February, which is right after we started dating. When I took survey of who Kendarius was, and I realized I was built to help process your pain. Who I was as a person.
Yeah.
You know, I had the ability to long suffer. I was patient. I loved in spite of. I looked past flaws. You know, who I was, as a person, I knew how to be strength for somebody else while they were needing support. Those pieces of me that are just fundamental parts of my character, you know, the big teddy bear that, you know, just lay on me and we'll cry it out together. Those pieces of me, as I watched as you were healing or going through pieces of the journey, I was like, man, God, you built me for her to be able to plug in where she had gaps. And vice versa. Mm-hmm. And that was the thing. I was like, man, I want to be here with her through the long haul. And it was what made me stay. That even honestly, as we had rocky times and rocky moments, it was like, nah, she fit me. Mm-hmm. I fit her.
Yeah.
You know, I'm her person. She's mine. And I remember at a certain point wondering if we were going to lose each other in the process.
Mm-hmm.
And the sadness of the possibility of not having you was too great for me to live with.
Mm-hmm.
And because I knew that, that was another thing where I was like, nah, we figure it out together, because I want to do life with her, not just today.
Yeah, the moment. Oh, that's so sweet, man. But for me, I will say, you touched on something that I think is so integral in relationships, is understanding identity. I'll answer mm-hmm. my question, but then I'll get back to a nugget that I really feel led to draw out, and then we'll close. For me, my answer to what made me hold on, at least through the dating to the engagement phase, and yours was centered deeply on, I saw how I was uniquely made to be, I was graced for her.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that was present for me. A big thing for me is in how I was built. I am a prophet. Like, I don't know how, it's not like a prophetic gift as much as it is, no, you are the person of mm-hmm. a prophet. And so there were things that I knew about KD that transcended, beyond human comprehension. And there were things about him that I was like, no, this is my person.
Yeah.
And it was in a depth and in a level that was tangible, but indescribable all at the same time, because of the things that I had written down and the very clear vision of how I told God I wanted things to go. Every single thing that I wrote down and every single thing that I said and every single thing that I could have imagined for our process to be, God had either one, allowed someone else with that same type of story to pass before me so that I could glean onto that. And then when our stories start falling into place, I'm like, wait a minute, this looks exactly like what you've shown me before. Mm-hmm. And then the second thing is that when I wrote down what I finally realized, and when I became more self-aware, and I think that's a beautiful thing that you brought up too. I'm going to hold that nugget right there too. Identity and self-awareness is that when I became aware of my needs and I recognized this man fits not only how I told God I would like to be found by a husband, but he fits the needs that I have as a person. And I just could not see myself with anyone. I could see myself with someone kind of similar to him, but there was something about just him that I knew was made for me in a spiritual place. So I was willing to endure all the things that came from just our humanity.
Mm-hmm.
There were things that God did for us, like the night that we would pray and prophesy together as friends. And there was a night where Kandarius is like, Alexis, I saw you like spiritually, like dancing before the Lord. And I will say this, there are so many women who I think have been so discouraged by the enemy, because there have been a lot of Christian rhetoric on, you know, women being ready for marriage. And the church does a great job at trying to equip women, but, you know, who equips the men? Whole nother conversation. But I think a hard part is women have been kind of told to pump the brakes on having permission to dream.
Mm-hmm.
And because the fairy tale don't exist, and God don't answer prayer that way, and girl, you're making an idol out of marriage, and all these different things. So we pull in the reins of our heart and we guard our hearts. But we are in guarding our hearts. I think a lot of Christian women stop looking for the things that they would love to experience in a husband. And so as a friend, he was the man who was washing my feet. Like mm-hmm. when a terrible ministry experience, like left my heart broken, he was the person who was taking me to the hospital. He was someone who was asking me hard questions when I was falling out with different family members and stuff. Like, he was someone who kept me accountable, and those things I admired in him. And I remember telling God, I said, no, he's somebody who I respect. And I, at least at the end of the day, God, want to be able to respect him as a man of God. And I think that goes back to that point that you said, where men kind of just take things in relationships and don't put up boundaries, don't speak up, don't say anything. Fellas, to encourage you, you would be surprised if you can say something firmly but gently, because gentleness is a fruit of the spirit. So the fruit of being a person of God is, I'm going to say this to you as gently as I know how, because I don't want this to land on you hard.
Yeah.
So I'm not trying to punish you with my words, but I am trying to firmly let you know that this is not okay with me. And so I teach that strategy inside of my coaching course, Forgiving Family, because I want people to know what it is to have firm but healthy conversations with people that end up resulting in you being heard and getting your needs met without turning the other person off.
Absolutely.
And so you really like hit the nail on the head though when you said identity. You knew who you were. And when you know who you are self-aware of what you are bringing in the relationship, which means you're aware of what you do bring and what you don't. And there were things inside of me. I am a pusher. My personality type, if you get around Alexis and you let me know for 0.5 seconds one of your dreams, one of your goals, and one of your plans, I will figure out a strategy in 15 seconds to push you to do at least one task to get that thing moving.
For sure.
And so I began to see KD as like, why don't he ever want to deal with the hard stuff? And why don't he ever want to talk about his feelings? And why don't he ever want to like move towards his goals? And so Kendarius like was like like stuck in the mud when I met him. Like he was just so stubborn in so many areas. And I remember knowing that like I am built to push people when they don't want to move.
Yeah.
Like I grew up around very stubborn folk. And so Kendarius was a beautiful challenge for me in learning that I am equipped to push people and people do listen to me. I just have to be mindful of my technique and not also and not also be insulting at the same time when I say, what the heck is wrong with you? Get up, pull yourself together. Like that's my personality. So if you come around me, I'm a pusher no matter what. But I was made for him.
Yeah.
That still did not mean I did not need to learn him, but I was made for him. So I love that. When you know who you are, you can identify what you're going to bring to a relationship and what you may need from another person. Because when God sees male and female as the image of God, he sees you as one flesh.
Absolutely.
So where you're weak, they're strong. Where you're strong, they're weak. And that's what God does. You backtracking on my words?
No. You said it great.
Yeah, I did. Whatever, Katie. Well, listen, if you are interested, I mentioned coaching a lot in this episode, but if you are interested in that class that I talked about and in that opportunity coming up, if you're listening to this podcast episode, it is February, the week of Valentine's, for 2024. But right now, between now and in the future, infinity and beyond, until God tells me to stop, I have a group that I am launching, a community, let me say, called Hey, Let's Heal Insiders. And the Hey, Let's Heal Insiders, one of our very first cohorts or teaching opportunities is called Forgiving Family, Finding Peace. And so I'm really excited to debut Forgiving Family, Finding Peace, because I am bringing together a community of women who know they are called by God, who want to figure out how to forgive family and live in peace so that you can thrive in your relationships. And one of the things that we talk about and one of the things we do is actually a character test to see what your core values are. And we start to learn your unique design so that it's easy for you to know what you bring in a relationship and how people perceive your personality. So we are made up of three things: personality, psychology, and past. Whenever you're meeting a person, you're meeting how they're wired to think, how they see themselves, and then their past. All three of those things are influencing a person anytime you meet them. And so because of that, if you're having friction in relationships, Forgiving Family, Finding Peace is an excellent place to start with the Hey, Let's Heal Insiders. And so I'm incredibly honored to bring this to you, and we're going to get started here soon. So if you want to sign up, here's what you do. You go to Insiders. Here's what you do. You go to insiders.heyletsheal.com. I'll say that again. Insiders.heyletsheal.com. Again, that's insiders.heyletsheal.com. All right. And you'll go ahead and get signed up there. And let me tell you something. It's only $30 a month to become a Hey Let's Heal Insider, or you can pay up for the year. And that's $297. And guess what? If you pay up for the year, you do get 12 30-minute coaching sessions, one-on-one from me, as well as everything that we do together as a community of insiders. So,
and she's certified, y'all.
Certified Christian life coach and a licensed minister of the gospel. So I cannot wait. This has been a power-packed episode. I can't wait to launch. And that opportunity is open. The membership is open year-round, but the cohort is not always open. And once those coaching opportunities for one-on-one, once those 10 slots are filled, I'm booked and busy, boo. No, I'm booked and healing, boo. And so I want to make sure that I pour my time into those 10 women and my schedule is open. Absolutely. So please take advantage, and you do not know when those 10 spots will fill up. So don't delay. We love you and talk to you soon.
Yeah.
Bye. With some new technology. And so I just wanted to make sure that this was recording.
How do I look
ashy? So that's just.
Is that the light?
That's the light, baby. You're not ashy. I would have told you if you was ashy. Hold on. Look down.